Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the shootout where we get a former football player or a fan to do a little bit less debate and a little bit more digging. This week on the pod, I'm really, really excited to bring to you a Premier League legend, bad boy goal scorer, goals on tap, also represented his country as well, former Man United player, Champions League winner, Premier League winner, won it all. Andrew Cole, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, very good, very good.
Thank you very much for coming on the shootout, man. Before we go any further, Andrew, this may play a theme throughout the interview. You changed your name from Andy to Andrew in the latter part of your career. Was there a poignant reason for doing this?
I never changed my name from start to end.
Oh, okay.
I was christened Andrew, my mother calls me Andrew, and it wasn't the latter part of my career.
Okay.
One of the boys in the media asked me, what you like, yeah. Andy or Andrew, so I said I like Andrew because that's what my mother calls me.
Okay.
And then there seemed to be a big hoorah about it, saying I changed my name.
Okay.
You can't change my name unless you want to see my birth certificate.
No. I just I noticed that on TV, people were referring to you as Andrew as opposed to, you know what I mean, most of your career you referred to as Andy, and I was wondering if that was a conscious thing that you insisted on being called Andrew or not, but it wasn't that, no?
No, it's just my mother calls me, innit?
Okay.
So obviously, she don't like Andy, so, you know, I roll with that. Okay. She named me, boy.
Okay. So you don't mind Andrew or Andy? Andy, there's no preference for you, for yourself?
I don't know, but obviously, like I said, my mother does. That's why she calls me Andrew.
I tell you what, I'll call you Andrew then. If that's what your mum calls you, I'll refer to you as Andrew during this interview. Andrew, how are you, man? And I don't just ask you that question in a kind of generic social greeting terms. Genuinely, how are you doing, man? Because it's been well documented over the last few years. You've had some health difficulties. How are you now?
For me, at the moment, I'm as good as I'm going to be. You know? I'm very happy with the way it's going. It's not been as easy as I thought it's going to be, I've got to be honest. But yeah, I'm happy with the way I'm recovering, slowly but surely. Still have bumps in the road, as they say, but you know, mentally I just got to get over those little humps and bumps and move forward and stay focused.
Indeed. I've read that you were in denial about your situation for quite a little while. Do you think that was male pride, or how much of that would you attribute to, you know, being a black man? Because in the black community, there's a lot of illnesses and ailments that, you know, we try and resist against and we try not to kind of really talk about. How much was that male pride and how much was that being a black man?
I'll have to put it down to all three that you said, to be brutally honest. I think men in general don't want to concede defeat when they're ill. Men in general don't want to tell anyone when they're ill. But when they are ill, I mean, they think we all think we can man up and just get on with it. Mm. And, you know, we can't always just man up and get on with it. And I think growing up as a black male, you know, I think we all know that we show weakness, we get frowned upon, regardless what it is.
Mm.
So it's all those kind of things, you know, all those kind of things come into it. But, you know, you learn from your mistakes, because ultimately when you're ill, you're ill, you're ill for a reason. So you just got to accept it and talk it out a little bit more than we do as men in general.
Mm. No, I hear you. And you also were quite conscious of not being one of those ex-footballers that when you stopped playing, the belly got big and you kind of just blew up and you put on a lot of weight. Why was it such? Why was not putting on weight after you finished playing such an important thing for you?
For me, well, I looked at it this way, you know. Like if I played football for 20-odd years, but, you know, in general kept fit, I couldn't see a sense of doing it for 25 years, however long you do it. And then after that time, you say, oh, God, I sod it, and I was put on loads of weight. It just defeats the object.
Yeah, I hear you.
It defeats the object. So I was always very conscious of doing that. Even if people say, oh, you're not going to put on weight anyway. I mean, I always said to myself, I'm very, very conscious that I didn't want to do things like that. So that was always my mindset still.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just just finally on your health there, you were part of a campaign to try and get the opt-out situation happening. That went through to Parliament. And a lot of people have resisted the opt-out for people who pass away having their organs used and given to other people who need them. And do you feel it's an irrational argument from people who feel that they shouldn't have to actively say they don't want their organs used? Or do you understand why some people have that opinion?
To a certain extent, but I mean, I'm going to talk it from my point of view now. Yeah? I look at it as an ethnic minority. When we come and have situations like this, yeah, because we don't come forward, I mean, as a culture to say, okay, yeah, we're ill, possibility of donating for another black individual, you know, that could help. We frown on things like that. Now, I was very, very fortunate that my nephew stepped forward straight away. Now, if my nephew didn't step forward straight away and had to wait for a donor, how long could that donor have possibly been? You know? Now, like I said, us as ethnic minority, because we're not prepared to do things like that. For whatever reason, we look at it and say, well, why would we want to give our organs to someone else when we pass away? I look at it this way, why wouldn't you if once you're not here, you're not here? So you're going to know no difference. But if you can save 1, 2, 3, 4 lives after that, why not? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's what we fail to understand. How to understand that we can help someone else if we're no longer here.
Do you think it's quite a selfish thing then to, like you say, not want to potentially help another human being in need when you can't use your organs?
No, I'm not going to say it's selfish. I think what it is, yeah, because we don't understand it the way we should understand it. I think that's why we look at it and say, I'm not prepared to do it.
Mm.
You understand? But I think if we understood it a lot better, yeah, we would look at it totally differently, because if you flip it on its head and say it is a family member, yeah, and you can help your family member, would you do it then?
Of course you would, yeah.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, all we need to do really is broaden our horizon, yeah, look at it from the outside, looking in, and say to yourself, okay then, let's go about it this way. Understand me? That's the way I look at it now.
I hear you. Let's talk football now, Andrew. I want to go back to when you were a teenager and you joined the Lillishaw Football School of Excellence when you was younger. And whenever I've seen you interviews and I kind of get the impression, I don't know you, but I get the impression that you're a little bit of an introvert and you like to kind of keep yourself to yourself and, you know, keep your business to yourself. How did coming out of the comfort zone that would have been home and moving to Lillishaw and playing with other boys from your age group who were all of, you know, all hot prospects in football in that environment. What was the hardest thing for you being in that environment, being the young man that you were or the young boy that you were then?
Leaving home. That's the hardest thing when you leave home and, you know, you're taking up a new culture, because when you're at home, you know, you're brought up a certain way, parents, you know, but once that happens and you leave home, you're living with 15 other boys, and we all see things in different ways.
Mm.
So leaving home was very, very difficult. You know, I think that was a tough thing. I understood for what it was. Yeah, I'm a quiet individual. People, I don't really. You know, but once I get to know people, I'm totally opposite. So I'm an individual, I feel people out first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And if I feel compatible with someone, then we're good. But those kind of things you learn as you get older.
Once you felt comfortable around these boys that you just met, after a while, you're away from home, but did you eventually find it, you know, you made friends with these boys and you kind of came out of your show a little bit?
Yeah, you've got to, because ultimately you've been there for 15 months. That you got 15 members, you know, you've got to look for each other, and that when you go to a place like that, that's the way it works out.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, so you're there for 2 years, 15 brothers, you look after each other, you eat, sleep, you drink together, you do everything together. So So you end up looking out for each other every single day.
When you moved to Newcastle, how did you deal with being, you know, such a popular figure up there? Because, you know, we know that they love their number nines up there. And you came from a club that was, you know, Bristol City wasn't the biggest club. How did you deal with being the figure of popularity that you ended up being in the time that you were there? What was it like being up there?
It wasn't easy at first. Well, to be fair, I'm telling a lie there. It wasn't easy at all. When I went there, like you said, I went there from Bristol City for it was decent numbers at the time, and I never understood just how big the club was in Newcastle, and what the fans thought of their football club, and what the fans thought of the number nine shirt. So I went there, and like I said, with no massive expectations, because you never go there with that massive expectation. My expectations were to go there as do as well as I could. And I'll go from there. But I got off to a flying start and I ended up getting 12-12. And then after that, the fans were unbelievable with me. And it was very, very difficult for me because obviously I'm still a young boy, you know. I left Arsenal. I went to Bristol City for, a year? And then all of a sudden, I'm playing for Newcastle United, where the fans love their football, love a goal scorer. And all the adulation ended up on me. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't hack it at the time. Because I was still a young man. I still want to do what young men did. You know, I couldn't hack it. And it was very, very difficult. Football, I enjoyed my football. But off the pitch, it was like, wow, this is a bit too much for me. You know, it's real, real hard.
Your father was a big cricket man. What was your relationship like, professionally and personally, like with your dad, considering that cricket was the sport that I imagine he would have preferred you to go into?
It was funny. It's very, very funny. Because my dad, he didn't really have a clue. To this day, my dad's not got a clue about football. You know, watch it and we'll have a laugh and joke about it or whatever, but he doesn't really understand it like that. If it was cricket, we could talk about it all day long. You know, so it was like when I decided to take it up, you know, he asked me, is it the right thing you want to do? And, you know, do you think you could make a living at it? Because the way my dad saw it when I was a young kid and that, obviously what he experienced when he first come from the Caribbean, when he first come from Jamaica to England, is all the racist element and all those kind of things. And he just said to me, can you actually make a living out of this game? You know, do you think you can excel in it? Because, you know, black people don't really play football, they play cricket. And that was his concept, like I said, coming from Jamaica when he came. So to sit down with me, and if he see any football on TV when he was first come over, he was like, he couldn't see no black man playing. So that's why he was asking the question when I was young. And I remember I always used to say to him, Dad, this is what I want to play. You know, I'm born in England and like all the kids in England want to play football. So really, I want to play football as well. And he just kept saying to me, are you sure? And I kept saying to him, Dad, of course I'm sure. And I mean, Pops, this is me. And then I was fortunate to do what I did and achieve what I achieved. And then he actually understands it now. You know, we have a good laugh and he understands that, he could understand now why I wanted to play football.
No doubt.
That was my love.
Yeah, you know, I
could play cricket. Cricket for me wasn't a problem. It wasn't a problem at all.
Was you good?
Yeah, cricket wasn't a problem to me. It wasn't a problem. Cricket came naturally to me.
Okay, go
came
on.
Naturally to me.
Well, you seem to do pretty well. Well, you did do very well in football. Third highest goal scorer in the Premier League with 187 goals. I've heard and seen some interviews, Andrew, that you've done before where, correct me if I'm wrong here, please, I get the impression that you don't feel like you got the respect and the recognition that you deserve for your record, especially in comparison to other strikers, you know, with comparable records or even inferior records. Is that fair and correct?
I'll be honest, brutally honest with you, because I am nowadays. I now have not been given the respect or the credit that I've done for the goals I've scored in my career. You touched on it there. That, I mean, if the media will talk about players who have scored less goals and talk about them as if, like, I was very lucky to achieve what I achieved and scored the goals that I scored. And I was on about this the other day to someone, and I said, you know, I've got 186 goals, and one penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this was someone else, they'd be clamoring about that. They'd be talking about, oh, unbelievable. And it's one of those ones, you know. When you end up passing away, people want to talk about how good a goal scorer he was, and it was this and that. Why do people do that when someone's no longer here?
So why do you think, you must have a theory, why you think you don't get the respect? Why do you think if why, anybody else?
I am what I am. I never played the game. Mm. I mean, I didn't play the game with the media because I didn't believe I had to play the game then. I am what I am. You know, I think people look at me and respect me for I am what I am. You know, I'm well respected in my community for being who I am. Mm-hmm. And that means a hell of a lot to me. For me now to go out there and be somebody else, you know, that's not being true to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ultimately, you've always got to be true to yourself first and foremost, and then what happens after that happens.
Mm.
Understand me? Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it now. Now, am I very proud of my record? Of course I'm very proud of my record.
Mm.
People want to talk about other individuals, they're more than entitled to do just that. But me, can I sit here comfortably and talk to you now about the record or how I feel people have treated me? Yeah, of course, Sammy, because I don't need to tell no lies. Mm-hmm. Numbers, all my numbers are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people talk about stats and goals and the devil knows what. I stuck up with every single one of them mm-hmm. with one penalty, so I sleep easy at night.
No doubt. Andrew, who's your favourite striker of all time?
All time?
Mm-hmm.
It depends now because the game has changed so much. What is a striker? I don't think we play with too many strikers now. I mean, I grew up watching my hero, my pioneer was Cyril Regis.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him. That's the reason I want to play football. You know, as well as thinking I'll go off decent at it. I looked at him and said to myself, well, if I could do half what he does here, I could possibly have a chance.
Yeah.
No, so he... when I don't really look at him and say, oh, striker best, I look at him and say to myself, yeah, boom. This is the individual I'm sitting down talking to you now. You know, so I'll have to look at someone like him and say, yeah. For me personally, he's the guy.
Was there a striker when you were playing who you would be like, well, you know, during your time, you'd be like, nah, that guy's a bad boy. That guy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Who was the guy in any league that you looked at and thought, nah, that guy is rude?
Thierry was. I respected people like Wright, Samuel Eto'o. All them kind of men.
Yeah.
All them kind of men. In fact, majority of the men that played against or played with England or played against, of course I have to respect them because they're playing at the highest level doing what they're doing.
Mm.
You understand me? Ultimately, yeah, you end up learning from all them guys, yeah, to make yourself a better player and bring yourself on as well. So all them guys that I played against, you know, all about the England scene, and like I said, Eto'o and all them men, Raul, Ronaldo, As we call him, the real Ronaldo, or I mean, old Fat Joe, you know, baller. That man is real baller, trust
me. Indeed. I mean, you mentioned that that these days, you know, strikers are very different in terms of how they're formed and what they do. How would you have fared in this modern day of football? How do you think you would have done nowadays?
Watching the football now.
Hmm.
Well, me and Yorkie talk about this all the time. Yeah, and me and Yorkie say, you know, if we were playing now, jeez, man's in trouble. Man's in trouble because I'm not being disrespectful to some of this defending I'm watching nowadays. Boy, we're talking serious numbers of goals, you know.
All right,
we're talking serious numbers of goals and all them things, man. You know, I nicked a few when I was playing, but I watch the game now. I'm a student of the game now. I say to myself, wow. If I was playing now, I'm not saying I love my time, I think I played in the best era. Yeah, and that's just me being honest.
Yeah.
You know, but I watch football now, I say myself, whoosh.
But I think it's more than a legitimate argument, Andrew, to suggest that with modern-day defences, man like you would have just eaten up goals for fun. But but conversely, how do you think a number nine like you would have fitted into a team with the likes of Pep, Jose, these modern-day managers who like a particular, you know, your Firminos and your Sons? They're very different to yourselves and your Coles and your Wrighties. Do you think you would have had the minutes that would have meant that you'd have scored so many goals nowadays?
You know the top and bottom of it, yeah? This is how it runs, yeah? Every team needs a goal scorer.
Mm.
So don't matter what formation you want to end up playing, yeah? You've got to have a goal scorer in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. So it's a case of, not a case of, oh, keep playing this system, or keep playing that system, yeah? Can you score goals?
Mm.
Now, if you speak to any of these managers now and tell them, what would you do for someone like me now, or someone like him, or someone like him, they'll tell them and say to you, oh, I'd have him all day long. He's got to score me goals. And that's the name of the game.
Mm. Fair enough. What was the worst blasting you ever had from Sir Alex Ferguson? What was the one raw scene he gave you at half time, full time, training, whatever? Do you remember one specific time where he just laid into you and you were scared?
No, for you, he laid into me. I think we ended up doing 1-1 against Chelsea at Old Trafford, and he came at half time and he went off on one. You know what I mean? But more time after him, I thought, man can't have this, you know, trust me, because, you know, then times I say to myself, my father can't talk to me like this, I can't make man talk to me like that.
So you weren't going to have it?
Yeah. So I had to take it out with him, have the argument with him.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's as simple as that. But you see, why I got so much respect for him, yeah, he'll have a go at you, yeah, and you'll come back with something, and he won't hold it against you.
Okay.
You understand me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, because it's male testosterone, you know, you're going to get involved in arguments and disagreements and all them kind of thing, but, you know, you got to turn around and say, okay,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I won't accept it, but we're not going to keep this feud running.
Yeah.
You understand me? So you just go from there, so.
I hear you. And what was the worst moment of your Man United career, Andrew? Was there a moment, a day, a week, that just particularly a mischance, a loss? What was the single worst time of your Man United career? Can you think of an incident where there's one shocking thing that happened that really pissed you off, really annoyed you?
I think more so is the injury that I picked up. You know, remember, I come back from holiday, just finished holiday, went back for pre-season. And I had a pneumonia.
Mm.
I don't know what I picked up from, and then come back from that, then end up breaking my leg, and, you know, well, fracturing a bone in my leg, and all those kind of things. They're the lowest point, because when you think you're over something, and then you get yourself fit, and then something else happens, you know, you got to get over those lows.
Mm.
And I think those are the lowest points. Football, when you play games, you miss a chance or whatever, that's part and parcel of the game. It's how you come back the week after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's disappointing that, you know, we didn't beat West Ham in 95, we went to win the league, but the year after, we went on to win it. You understand me? And then how things transpire in life, you know, in 95, you know, we should have won against West Ham, we didn't win, ended up drawing 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
99, unfortunate enough to get the winner, you know,
mm-hmm.
but ends up beating Tottenham, we end up winning the league.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say the world goes round, it does go round, because I rectified myself in 99.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what happens, you know. Football, I mean, life's about swings and roundabouts.
Of course. Who's the better finisher out of York, Solskjaer and Van Nistelrooy?
Oh,
yoy. Who for you was the best finisher of those three?
You know, Ollie was a very, very good finisher. Rude was it. Rude, yeah. I'll go for Rude.
You go for Rude,
I'll
yeah?
York had everything. Every finish in the back. He was a sexy finisher. No, but Rude was, oh. Rude was clinical. He was brutal.
Okay. And what was the one goal you can think of, Andrew, that gave you the most pleasure at Man United? Was there one goal that it might have been the finish, it might have been what it meant in the result, or was there one goal that gave you more pleasure than any other goal?
I would go for the goal against Barcelona in the new camp.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, just the whole team effort, you know, just the way we play the 1-2, the little dummies, me and Yorkie, and then I get the opportunity to finish it off. I think when I look back at that, because everyone still talks about it now, so people still talk about things like that. Yeah, they look at that and say, wow, I mean, that's clinical, and what a goal that is. So when you have kids still talking about, oh, the Colin York goal and blah, 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 that boosts you. That boosts you because everyone knows just how good a goal it was, but they have to be involved in the interplay and that.
Oh,
yeah, special.
I hear you. Let's talk about management now briefly, Andrew. As far as I'm aware, you're not a big fan of the Rooney Rule. If that's true, what do you think is the answer to getting more black and ethnic minority coaches into senior positions of management at the top clubs or any clubs?
Well, let me tell you something about this Rooney Law, yeah? This Rooney Law basically telling man, come sit down with me and talk to me, yeah? And I report back and say, look, I've just spoke to Andy Cole. It's a good interview, but it's not the one for us. And? So that's all it is. All it, for me personally, and this is just my view, it ticks a box. That's all it does, is tick a box.
Do you have any kind of theories or answers to what the answer could be if we're going to get more black and ethnic minority coaches managing? Do you know how we do that? Do you know what an alternative is?
First and foremost, people got to believe they've got the opportunity. Now, if you don't believe you've got the opportunity, people are not going to want to get involved in it. As simple as that. Mm. So you're talking about ticking boxes, you know, straight away there's an issue. You know? You've got to give someone the opportunity, and you can't continue to hide behind experience, because these experienced managers who get jobs, yeah? How did they get experience?
Mm.
You know, so a lot of people still live behind that one as well. Oh, you've not got the experience or whatever. So things like that. Okay. You know, you're going to have to give trial and error. You're going to have to give someone the opportunity to manage and make mistakes, but at least give them an opportunity again if it does make a mistake.
Is that part of why you've never pursued management or coaching? Is that a reason why you just think, sure, there's no hope of me getting any kind of job, so why waste my time?
But me, as I think, me personally, management's long. Mm. Because if you're not going to give an opportunity, it's a long thing.
Mm.
You know, coaching, I think coaching's a little bit different, because more people are like more receptive to give you a little go in coaching, because you're not heading anything up.
Mm.
Understand me?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've done a little bit of coaching recently. I've enjoyed that. I've really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to dip your toes in, but come out of it, and you know, keep doing that. Now, could I possibly get the bug for that? Yeah, dipping my toes in. Yeah, boom, couple of days, 3 days, boom, out of it. I could get the bug for that. Understand me?
Mm-hmm.
But management is different. Someone. He's got a broaden their horizon and say, yeah, I'm prepared to give this opportunity to, I mean, for someone like a Powell.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give Powell an opportunity, or Chris Hughes, he deserves his opportunity 10 times over.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and now Chris is proving it. You know, that he's a good manager. You know? But look how many times Chris has had to prove himself.
No, indeed. Do you feel like black players and managers almost need like a separate union of its own to combat a specific problem? Do you feel they need a kind of a separate body to tackle this problem?
I don't know if we need a separate union to tackle things like that. What you got to remember, yeah? It took black players a long time to get accepted in football. Now go back to Cyril and all them, man, Bob Haynes and all them, and Brendan. You know, look how long it took for them to be accepted.
Mm.
You know, that wasn't done overnight. But them man getting accepted, it made it easier for man like me to come through.
Mm.
You know, because they'd already taken all the grief and all the stress and then that makes it easier for us. So ultimately, I think a lot of us look at the management in the same kind of way. Can people like, you see, you can pave the way for us and all them kind of things, you know? We'll have to wait and see, because I think this process is going to take a hell of a lot longer than the playing process, because when you're playing, you prove to people that, oh yeah, my man's a good player, yeah, my man can play, and not the stigma that we used to have, like, oh, when it's cold, he doesn't fancy, or them kind of talk.
Yeah, the nonsense is, yeah.
You know? Management, you know, you've got to be given that opportunity to prove that you're good enough.
And just finally on diversity, Andrew, Man United announced that they will be reigniting their ladies team, I believe applying for an application next season. Why do you think United have now decided to do this? Do you have any ideas as to why they didn't for so long and why they're changing their mind now?
I'm not sure. I've got to be brutally honest. I'm not sure. But for me personally, I think it's a great initiative. Mm-hmm. I'm not chauvinistic in any way, shape or form. I've got six sisters. I mean, so when it comes to women, I mean, I've got to be brutally honest, is that I love women. You know, so for them, now, Man United now to have the opportunity to give women to play for Manchester United. Yeah, I'm 100% behind that because I watch women's football and it's good. It's good. It's very good. It's very competitive, you know. Got some real good players there. So for me personally, like I said, I think it's brilliant that Man United are going to do it.
That's one. England, 15 caps you got for your country. Why do you think you didn't get any more than that?
Well, I think, well, I've always said, you know, politics is not only just in politics, you know. Politics is in sports too. And unfortunately, it's at the wrong time for me. It's at the wrong time. I think it all could have changed for me if England had gone to the World Cup in the US.
The 94 World Cup.
Yeah, 94 World Cup.
Yeah.
If England qualified, then I think things would have changed for me. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think I was basically going to be a cert to have gone to the World Cup. You know, playing the Premier League, I got I ended up getting 41 goals that season. I think it was 41 goals. Graham Taylor was manager. God rest his soul. He was manager then, and I knew that if England qualified, then there was no way that could have possibly left someone out and scored so many goals. Yeah. Because the clamour for me to get the senior squad then was like, oh, he's got to get the senior squad, got to get the senior squad. He's getting all these goals.
But you were banging goals for the 2, 3, 4 years after that World Cup. And you say politics. That's about timing. The timing just didn't match up. When you were banging, they didn't qualify for a World Cup. But the years after that, you were banging in goals. So why do you think, you mentioned politics there, why do you think you didn't get picked more subsequently after that 94 campaign?
Well, it was funny because when Venables got the job and I was struggling with the injury at Newcastle, you know, and I remember in a conversation with Kevin and he said, like, why did he leave me? Because obviously I had an injury or whatever. And then he got to say, and he said, look, you're not prepared to give out caps like confetti. I said, myself, give out caps like confetti. All that, if I'm scoring goals here, and I think I'm good enough to represent England, yeah, you've got to give someone like me an opportunity. So it's not like giving a cap to a ham and egg. Now I'm proving my way in the Premier League. So when things like that start to happen, I knew from then it's that it's going to be a long, long situation.
Okay, so from then you got the vibe from then that these guys ain't feeling me.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Okay. You know, it wasn't what it was cracked out to be. I remember when I used to watch England when I was a young kid. Yeah, England was whoever was playing well for their club. Yeah, international week or international game, whatever, they would end up playing for England. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Now England's become more like it's a club association. You know, it's a club association whereby, you know, it's England, but whoever I think is the best team from the best players,
yeah,
the club,
yeah.
You know, sometimes the players for the club, yeah, might be the best players to play for England at a certain game, whatever they.
Do you feel like the colour of your skin played a role in you not getting more caps? Let's just be real. Do you feel like there was an element of racism because your record, know, your stats back up that you should have more caps?
I don't look at things like that. I don't hinge on like that because it's a multicultural world.
So I said, no, I don't need you on things like that. I mean, ultimately, I'm not as, that's the most important thing to me. I'm not as good enough. No, I wasn't even watching. I was meant to be.
This year's World Cup, this summer, England obviously there. First of all, how do you judge a successful campaign for England? What for you is a successful campaign? And should there be any racism at the World Cup? What do you want to see being done? Sorry? You think a quarter final is a successful campaign?
Yeah. They get it done well. Very well.
Okay.
Very well. No, they're not going to win the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter finals, I think, would be a very cool result for England.
And if there's any racism that kicks off at the World Cup, what do you want to see happen? How should the players and the managers, if anything happens, do you advocate walking off the pitch? Do you want to see more done by the white players that hear stuff? What should happen? Should it go pear-shaped?
Race for me is it's not about sport or what they should do or what they shouldn't do. I mean, I'll be brutally honest with you. I'm not this race thing like that, you know? Because whatever people are seeing fit, they will address it at that time and they will go from there. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. I hear. Let's talk about your son briefly as well now. He seems to be doing really well at the moment, currently at Wigan. If there was one piece of advice you would give to another dad who had a son playing professionally in order to have a successful career, what would the one piece of advice would you give to a dad with a son coming into the game?
Enjoy it.
Okay.
Enjoy it. Work hard and enjoy it. As simple as that, you know. It's a short career.
Mm-hmm.
If you get there, you know, you make it. It's a very, very short career. So just enjoy it as long as you can.
Are you very, very Chris Eubank-esque with your son in terms of his career?
No.
Or are you quite hands-off and let him do his thing?
No. I look at it now. Yeah, my boy Pitney's supposed to do what he's supposed to do. I will give him guidance. I will answer his questions when he needs answering, but I've lived my dream.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've lived my dream and I've done what I had to do. Now it's his time. Simple things.
And let's just finally just finish on Man United. Go back to United. Do you think Jose has to change his methodology next season if he wants to win the title? Because we're seeing the teams that seem to be progressing are the Liverpools, the Cities, the Tottenhams with managers that seem to want to play attacking, aggressive, front foot football. And the try and nick a point here, get a win there football seems to be kind of phased out, which seems to be synonymous with Jose's traditional way of playing and winning trophies. Do you feel he has to change to be competitive again next year? Or do you think that his way will ultimately come good?
You know, only time will tell you, you know, because time is the master. Now, we get to the end of the season, so I've never managed, so I don't know what pressure you go through or what you're looking for from your team, you know, but no doubt, say, look at it in the summer, prepare himself for the new season, when the season's over, and make up his mind how he wants to progress with the players at Manchester United or whatever maybe. So, I mean, the only one who can really answer that question is Jose. You know, every team... Every season, every team gets better because progression is part of football. You need to progress. So will he change the way he plays football? He's the only one who can answer that question. I can't do that.
Do you think he needs to? The gap's what? 12 points?
I don't know, because if I went to the management, I'm not sure how I'd want to manage or how I want my team to play.
Yeah.
No, I'd only know that if I got in there and start making a decision, what plays do I have at my disposal and X, Y, Z, and formation or whatever. So, you know, for me to sit here and say, oh, yeah, I'll do this and do that, I can't say that. I can't say that because I've never managed, and like I said, I don't know what players I've got at my disposal to be able to play at what system.
You played in an era, Andrew, where trophies were raining down season upon season. Do United fans now have to get used to the fact that trophies, the big trophies, they might be sparse? It might be one Premier League every 4 or 5 or 6 years now. Or not.
Not as much as that. I don't believe it as much as that. I think it's going to get harder. course, going to get harder because everyone has money. You know, there's more investors to buy football clubs, to put a lot of money in football clubs.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Premier League doesn't get any easier like that. I mean, all the top boys now are vying for the same players. Because all the teams can afford those top players. And it's all a decision on what the players want and where they want to go or where they perceive themselves winning as many trophies as possible for the next 4 or 5 years, career, whatever it may be.
Do you think Lukaku and Pogba get unfair criticism? Do you think they get too much heat? Or do you think that the level of players that they are and the club that they're at, they need to be playing 7, 8, 9 out of 10 every single week?
Well, what you say, 9 out of 10, that is you are. Now, as an individual, you know that if you've had a good game or you've had a bad game. I mean, one in the newspaper can tell you about, oh, you got 7 out of 10. Well, their performance to get to 7 out of 10. I mean, I've always asked that question. How do you get to 7 out of 10? Or what you see? Well, what you see is not what the individual sees or plays. You know, so I'm not sure. But Paul and Robin Lou, of course, going to get flat because it's big money, very big money. The people from Manchester United, and Manchester United are expected to win week in, week out. So you're always going to get when you play for a big club. But that's part and parcel of being at a big club.
And do you feel their performances have shown you that they can handle it? Or do you have concerns that these are good players, they're not champions?
I'm not concerned about the pairing. Paul's gone to Italy, he's done it in Italy. Come back to Manchester, he did very well last season coming. Had a few little injury problems this season. His form's taken a bit longer to come back to. But he got himself 2 goals at the weekend. I'm not sure. Lukaku. I mean, for his first season up that day, I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's been phenomenal. You know, I think he's realised coming to Man United, it's not easy. We can't have any weekends off. I mean, so there you go.
That's interesting. And just final question, Andrew. I'm going to be asking this to all my guests on the pod. What's the one thing you think would make football better? What's the one thing that you would say if that happened or if that stopped or if that was introduced or if this... Is there one thing you think that would make the football significantly better?
I'm a football lover. I just love the game. I love the game. So at this present moment in time, can anything make it better? Me personally, no. I think this VAR, at the moment, that's causing a problem because... It's not gone the way everyone expects to go. It's having teething problems. So at the moment, leave that one alone. So, but otherwise, I like the controversial stuff after a game that, I mean, the human eye hasn't picked up or whatever. You have the spiel about it after. You complain about this, you complain about that or whatever. So, no, not for me.
You think football's in a good place? You think football's in a good place and it's, you know, what you're seeing, you're enjoying, you think it's competitive, you think it's generally in a very good place?
Football, of course, yeah, it's very competitive. It's very competitive. The Premier League goes up and down in quality. Yeah, yes, it does. You know, but it's very competitive, you know.